and Susan Snyder.
Madam Chair, George Hoffman, Department of Human Services. I have Susan Snyder sitting at my right. Sean Welch isn't able to be here today because he's working on a supplemental budget issue.
I can imagine.
We have prepared an overview for the committee of the changes from the end of session. This material has been handed out to members. It's first a numerical summary of the forecast changes by the budget activities that we follow in the November forecast and the February forecast. If you look at the first page of the handout, you see the budget activities listed down the left, the end of session forecast in thousands of dollars, and then the change in November and the change in February, and then the February forecast. So you can look at the total general fund, third line from the bottom, and you can see that our net change in the general fund forecast in the November forecast was an increase of $18 million, and in the February forecast, an increase of $40.9 million. The increases we're seeing in the February forecast are in the net all attributable to the less favorable economic situation. So we, in the February forecast for this biennium, we have an increase of approximately $41 million. In the next biennium, if you look at page 3, again, third line from the bottom, under the February forecast change, which is the second column from the right, you see an increase of $141 million. So our forecast increase in February is, I would call it modest in the current biennium, but substantial in the next biennium. And all of that is essentially attributable to the weakening economy. Most of that cost in the February forecast change comes from a higher forecast of enrollment of children and parents in the medical assistance program. A part of it also comes from a higher GAMC forecast and a higher MFIP forecast. But most is from the medical assistance increase around families with children. So that's just sort of a thumbnail description of the February changes. At the what you have in this handout is page 1 is an analysis of the changes for the current biennium. On page 2, you have all the corresponding percentage changes. And then page 3 is the same format for the next biennium. And again on page 4, the corresponding percentage changes. So we've been, the general fund forecast has been reasonably stable. For the current biennium, it's up 0.7%. For the next biennium, it's up 1.5%. And if it were not for the economic changes in the February forecast, we would not see a forecast increase in the next biennium. It would be almost the same as end of session. Of course, there are lots and lots of small elements changing in the forecast, small to large elements. We prepare a document describing the forecast changes in November, and then another document describing the forecast changes in February. The November document is on our website. The February document will be on our website shortly. I have a small supply of paper copies of the details on the February forecast. If any of the members want those at the end of the meeting, or I can provide some now, I'm not going to go through the detailed document because it seemed out of the appropriate scope for this meeting. Since you have not heard about the November changes, it didn't seem to make a lot of sense to go through all the February changes in detail. So instead, we have some general notes on what has changed, and this starts on page 5. We have some thumbnail notes on what has changed in the forecast, on the net change in each of the forecast activities since the end of session. And what we've done here is when we get the explanation for each biennium down to less than 1%, that's where the explanation ends, since it's a very high level explanation of what's moving. So, for example, MA long-term care facilities on page 5, the forecast since the end of session is down 1.3% for the current biennium and up 0.2% in the next biennium. So the explanation only addresses the reduction in the current biennium and says that the nursing facility caseload and cost per day is down a little bit. And that is the basic reason for the change. This activity is dominated by the cost of the nursing home caseload. And so it's the biggest piece that is in that budget activity.
So it's a result of a little bit lower case mix than we've had?
It's a little bit lower number of people and a little bit lower average cost. Most of the change occurred in November, and one element in that average cost was the recipient contributions were a bit higher than we had anticipated in the end of session forecast. So what we're looking at here in the net is a very small change. MA LTC waivers and home care. Here we have we have been progressively moving elderly waiver coverage into managed care. As elderly waiver coverage moves into managed care and we make a capitation payment for it instead of fee-for-service payments, the activity under which the payments are made shifts. So it shifts out of this LTC waiver budget activity and it shifts into MA elderly and disabled basic. And so what this is showing you is that much of the movement in the current biennium is just
shifting.
It's just the effect of this shift. So the overall change for the current biennium is a decrease of 1.6%. 1.2 percentage points of that change comes from the shift of the elderly waiver into the other budget activity. And if you look down at the MA elderly and disabled basic, you see the other side of that shift. And this is a bit of a nuisance to have to have to talk about these things, which are basically only mechanical, but the budget activities are helpful as a way to break out what is going on in the medical assistance program. So after accounting for the shift out of the LTC waiver activity, the change that's left is less than 1% in the current biennium and an increase of 1.3% in the next biennium. And the biggest factor explaining the increase in the next biennium is an increase in the average cost of service in the CADI waiver. And this was also a change that we had in the November forecast, not in the February forecast.
So is it just kind of hard to tell how fast the elderly waiver shift is going to take place? Because it depends on the negotiations between the health plans and the counties, or?
Madam Chair, it depends on whether the capitation product, which is available or which is being offered in a given area, is a capitation product that includes elderly waiver capitation or a product that does not. And so there was a big... A capitation product is a plan. It's like MSHO is a capitation product. And MSHO is a capitation product that for some time has included elderly waiver managed care. When Medicare Part D started in January 06, there was a major change in our elderly capitation products that were available, and there was a big expansion of MSHO because it was a qualifying product under Part D. And so in January 06, there was a large expansion of elderly waiver capitation because there was a large expansion of an HMO, of our HMO product that included elderly waiver capitation. There's another smaller change occurring in January 08, which was a introduction of a new capitation product to four or five additional counties, and that's MSC Plus, Minnesota Senior Care Plus. In place of Minnesota Senior Care, and Minnesota Senior Care Plus includes elderly waiver capitation, the previous product does not. And so it's these changes in the available capitation plans or
so most of this has to do with interaction between our program and the federal government product designs.
Part of it had to do with Part D.
Yeah.
And what was a qualifying capitation product after Part D. Part of it has to do with our own changes in what is being offered in different counties. So it's a mix of those two things, Madam Chair.
Well, the only reason I ask is because I thought we made this change in 2003, and it's 2008 now. So I'm just kind of having a hard time kind of understanding why this shift is taking so long. But
my understanding is that we authorized it in 03, but it only... And right now, I think 3/4 of elderly waiver is in capitation arrangements, and all the big counties of the state have that. I think it still does not cover absolutely all of elderly waiver. I'm not sure what the issues are that make the difference.
Okay, well, why don't we continue?
Elderly and disabled basic, there have been some ups and downs here within the activity, but most of the net change is accounted for by the elderly waiver shift. So I won't go into greater details on this. There have been small caseload increases and decreases. This is the activity in which we pay the clawback to the federal government. There's been some change there. And the details are on this, if you're interested in details, are in the November and February forecast documents. MA families with children basic. Two big changes here, one in November. The change in November is that we had for a number of years been forecasting that our new eligibility system, health match, was going to result in the shift of numerous Minnesota Care children and parents over to medical assistance from Minnesota Care. And we made a decision for the November forecast that we had a number of times put off the date and changed the forecast for this health match shift into MA from Minnesota Care. We made a decision for the November forecast that date was sufficiently uncertain that we would take that shift out of the forecast. And so a major change in the November forecast was that we took that shift out of the forecast, and that meant a decrease in the medical assistance forecast for families with children, and a corresponding increase in the Minnesota Care forecast. So we, starting in the fall, we just assumed that population was going to stay in the Minnesota Care program as far as our forecast went. So that was a substantial decrease in this forecast, which occurred in November, a 1% reduction in the current bienniums, and 6.6% in the next biennium. In the February forecast, we have the economically driven caseload increase, which comes fairly close to offsetting the earlier decrease.
So before we get to that, could you just quantify what the change was for this biennium in November? The dollar amounts?
Yeah, in this activity, Madam Chair?
Yes.
In this activity, if you look back to page one and you look at the row families with children basic, about fourth from the top, you see we have an increase in this activity of $42.7 million. And the decrease that we had in November in this biennium.
And so what part of that is attributable to health match as opposed to other changes? All of it?
The health match change was in the November forecast.
So the 1.2% decrease how much of what's on page one is that?
The health match change in the November forecast accounted for $19.4 million of decrease out of the $26.9 million which you see on the in the table on page one. So it's a bit more than two-thirds. And essentially all of the February increase is economically driven caseload change.
And I just have to say this. I know it doesn't do any good, but you know, it's pretty disconcerting to know that we have that many families in Minnesota Care who really are eligible for MA, so that Minnesota Care is paying for that share of the population, number one, and number two, those folks are having to pay premiums when in reality they're eligible for a program that's premium free. And they have other benefits in MA that are not available to them in the Minnesota Care program. So we are going to have a hearing on Health Match on Thursday, since the contract is being permanently discontinued. this decision to take it, to take the Health Match effects out of the forecast, were made before that was known. But well, the whole thing is pretty upsetting. I guess that'd be the best way to put it. I realize there's nothing you can do about it. You just tell us about it.
I understand, Madam Chair. The federal government also has some concerns about this. We never anticipated that we would end up with such a substantial overlap in populations. But we implicitly allowed it by not excluding people from Minnesota Care who could be eligible for medical assistance. And we're now in a spot where of the children and parents in Minnesota Care, about half of them appear that they could equally be on the medical assistance program.
Well, and the financial part of this, in addition to, you know, having different funds that have that pay for this, is that under medical assistance we have different matching funds available from the federal government than we do in Minnesota Care. And in fact, our Minnesota Care federal match is capped, whereas our Medicaid match is not. So it doesn't, I mean, I realize at the moment it's probably kind of convenient that we don't have the people that should be in MA in MA, because it would have a general fund impact. But in the long run, it seems to me that this relationship with the federal government means that we're losing some federal matching dollars that we otherwise could be generating for these families. And so I think we need to continue to think about this issue.
Madam Chair, the matching rate is the same, but there are some caps on how
there's a per person per member cap, and there's a total cap on parents.
There are budget caps which are part of what you get because this is a because the Minnesota Care coverage arrangement is a waiver, and so it's done at the discretion of the federal agency, and they impose budget caps. We're fairly comfortable financially as far as the budget caps go, so the budget caps to date have not cost us any money.
Well, but it's in part because we've made decisions so that it won't. But there have been times when we made decisions that, I mean, we couldn't make decisions that we otherwise might have made. In the past, for example, we've talked about increasing provider rates in the Minnesota Care program. Well, there was a problem about coming up against the per person per member cap. If half the people, half the families in the program were eligible for MA, there's no per person per member per month cap in MA. So anyway, I just don't want to dwell on this, but I do think that it's certainly something that we need to think about a little bit more as we go along here. Since we were waiting to get Health Match to fix it for us, and Health Match isn't going to be fixing it for us, we need to be thinking about it more than we have, I think. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just following up on what your concern is, and I guess I'm just wondering, so for example, if someone were in Minnesota Care and they have limitations on what will be spent for their hospital bills and things like that, and they could have been eligible for MA, that just seems to me to be, as you said, a really big problem, because if they should have been eligible for MA, they should have been able to be in that program and not have those additional spend downs or whatever they would have had to go through to qualify to be dealing with the part that wasn't covered by Minnesota Care.
Well, that's just one of the differences in the benefits. So I do think that it's something that we need to think about a little bit more when we have to have it on our to-do list here. Do you want to continue?
Alternative care is a non-entitlement program. We forecast cancellation of some alternative care funds to medical assistance, but we don't forecast any change in the program itself because the appropriation is fixed.
And is it looking like the caseload is about what we expected?
It is finally, Madam Chair, about what we expected. We didn't make any change in the February forecast. It's finally starting to grow more or less as expected in the November forecast.
Good.
General Assistance Medical Care, page 6. Most of the increase is from a higher enrollment forecast. We've increased the enrollment forecast in this program both in the November forecast and in the February forecast. A bit smaller portion of the changes is explained by higher rates, mostly higher capitation rates. It became evident by November that when we implemented the legislative decision to move a lot of GAMC people out of GAMC and into Minnesota Care, and we call when they move, the people that we move into Minnesota Care, we call transitional Minnesota Care people, and they're in a transitional status for 6 months. What became evident after they had been moved is that the people who were being moved over to Minnesota Care were were a good deal healthier on average than the average GAMC only group, and this and other factors triggered increases in the GAMC capitation rates, and so that's where much of the increase in the rates comes from, and there was a corresponding drop in the Minnesota Care capitation rates, affecting all of the adults in the Minnesota Care program, but especially this group that was moving over from the GAMC program. The Chemical Dependency Fund, we did a very substantial forecast increase in the November forecast for recognizing that since the beginning of calendar year 07, we had been seeing higher numbers of placements and higher average cost per placement. This is a fairly small program relative even to GAMC, and the forecast increases in November were a 10% increase in what the fund would pay in the current biennium and a 17% increase in the next biennium. When you recognize that there is a fixed federal contribution to this activity, we use $9 million of federal block grant money in this activity each year, but because the federal contribution is fixed, a 10% increase in payments for the fund turns into a 15% increase in the state share cost because there isn't any increase on the federal part of the coverage. And correspondingly, the 17% increase in the next biennium turns into a 22% increase.
So do we think that it's because we have more people using drugs or more poly use or more... why would the average cost be going up?
The chemical dependency staff analyzed the data, and they couldn't find a particular diagnosis or a particular type of situation that was the cause of this. And so I don't know what the reason is. I can only point to the timing of it, and point to the fact that it is a really small program, with between 2,000 and 3,000 placements in an average month, and so it's not. It's subject to the kind of fluctuation that we're seeing here because of the small size.
So even though these percentages are large, the dollar amounts are not?
Madam Chair, the dollar amounts you can see on page one. And it is $25 million in the current biennium. So it's not...
Well, so that's not small in my book.
No. No, it's a big percentage change. It's a small numbers program compared to MA, but it's also a program expensive per person, so it's a substantial cost difference.
Well, when these things are going on during deficit period, it's helpful to know what's the cause of it. Because if the cause of it is that we are getting more difficult people into treatment, that's one thing. If the cause of it is providers are somehow pushing the system, that's another thing. And you know, it's hard to know whether one should try and do anything about it if we don't know exactly why it's happening.
Madam Chair.
We.
Senator Rosen.
And Madam Chair, if the modality of the treatment has changed also.
Yes, that.
More expensive because of the poly issues.
If it's a response to a change in the addictions being treated, mm-hmm. but if it's a change in modality that's being provider-driven, you know, if we don't know, it's hard to tell. And if
right.
we can't tell, then it's hard to make a proper response to it.
I will take that back, Madam Chair. We made a considerable effort to get some answers because we anticipated this question.
These are big changes.
Okay, Minnesota Family Investment Program. The changes here we have an unusual financing arrangement, unlike what we have in medical assistance, where we have a federal percentage share for most of our costs. Here we have a federal block grant. We have to maintain state spending, and so we have to maintain a certain level of spending in what we spend on the program proper, on the benefits, and we can count other things as maintenance of effort. And one of the main things that we count toward that maintenance of effort spending is the child care assistance that the state pays for. And so part of what's going on here is that the child care assistance forecast has gone down. And so we have to spend more state money in the MFIP program. And that means we get to spend less federal money out of the TANF fund. And if you look back at page one, you can see that in the current biennium we've had increases in MFIP of $22 million in November and $14 million in February. Those look vaguely similar if you go a line down to the decreases in the child care assistance forecast. And that's not accidental, because when we forecast less maintenance of effort spending in child care, we have to make it up in the state spending on the MFIP program. And then with the state MFIP spending up, if you look at the second row from the bottom, you can see that the TANF spending is down, again in a measure vaguely similar to the movement of the MFIP forecast. And so these things interact in this way, especially child care forecast changes. Now, we also, in the February forecast, we have some MFIP caseload increase, but most of the movement in the forecast, both in the current biennium and in the next biennium, in the MFIP forecast, is around maintenance of effort issues.
Right, and we are trying to give the department more flexibility in what dollars they can claim as maintenance of effort. The Senate's passed that bill. I hope the House does so shortly, so that you can perhaps back claim some of your maintenance of effort.
Or child care assistance. Most of what's happened in the forecast here is that the caseload projections are down. They were down in November. They are down some more in February. Part of what seems to be going on is less employment and less employment opportunity for MFIP caseload. So even though the MFIP caseload forecast is up, especially in the next biennium, the child care forecast is still down a bit because we see a falling participation rate of MFIP families using child care. And we're also forecasting less transition year child care coverage, and that is also sensitive to the job market. Because what puts families into transition year child care is that they earn enough money to get off the MFIP program. The other, the other part of what's changed in the child care forecast is we had several million of federal money that was unspent in 07. It was applied to 08, and that explains a significant part of the rest of the change in the child care forecast. General assistance, the caseload projections have gone steadily upward in fairly modest steps. This seems to be affected by the economy, aided by the economy in any case, and the rest of what's changed is mostly technical changes around the treatment of general assistance recoveries, program recoveries. Group residential housing, very small increases in the caseload forecast and in the average cost, averaging about a 2% increase. And here we also have some changes in the treatment of program recoveries and the forecast of recoveries. Most of the technical changes around the recoveries cancel out on the bottom line of our forecast. Minnesota Supplemental Aid, again, it's the recoveries, it's the treatment of recoveries that makes the major difference. And the caseload forecast was a little bit lower. On the TANF funds, it's mostly the other side of the coin from the MFIP changes. Increased general fund spending is the main reason for the decrease in what we can spend out of TANF. And then some increase in the next biennium around the caseload effect of the economic scenario. On page 6, Minnesota Care, we have seen a steady drop in enrollment in Minnesota Care. The dropping of the shift to medical assistance, that explains a 2% increase in the current biennium, a 12.7 in the next biennium. Apart from that, we've seen a steady drop in enrollment. It finally seems to be leveling off. It leveled off a bit earlier for the adults without kids. We're anticipating that much of that drop that we've seen, that we've had to add to the forecast, is going to be canceled out by increasing enrollment as a result of a shorter application adopted in February 08. So while we have a decrease in the current biennium for a lower caseload, we have a small increase in the next biennium. We had major changes in HMO rates. Almost all of this program consists of capitation payments. There was a rebasing of all of the Minnesota care capitation rates. As a result, although the overall rate for the program went up about 3%, we had a marked decrease in the rates for the adults without kids because of the rebasing of rates on Minnesota Care experience. So we had a drop in the rates for the adults without kids where the state pays 100% of the cost. And so the state got all of the savings from the drop in the adult rates. The families' rates, the rates for the children went up quite a bit, and the rates for the adults came down a bit. So we had a net increase in the rates for the families, but that's an area where the federal government pays about half of the cost. And so the net effect of all these changes in rates was a fairly substantial savings to the state.
So how often do you rebase these rates?
Madam Chair, I think every 4 or 5 years. In the 05 session, legislation was passed which mandated verification of several factors around Minnesota Care eligibility. One of those factors was employer-sponsored health insurance. In the 07 session, the legislature repealed the mandate to verify employer-sponsored insurance and unearned income. And we anticipated in a fiscal note that change was going to restore the caseload effects that we attributed to the '05 mandate to verify. We saw caseload increase following implementation of that mandate, and so we made an assumption that we would go back to the previous policy, which was that the worker verified when they thought there was a reason to. The department made a decision not to go back to that earlier policy because there were concerns about program integrity. A review of eligibility in the meanwhile had found numerous eligibility errors around employer-sponsored health insurance. And so the department opted to maintain a good part of the verification that had been done under the mandate for verification. And so in two different forecast changes in November and February, we wrote off most of the caseload increase that we had anticipated to come from the return to the earlier verification policy. And that is the 2.3% and the 5%, which is shown on this targeted ESI line. Targeted ESI line, targeted ESI verification is the department's term for the level of verification, which is continuing under the new policy.
And I have to say this, Mr. Hoffman. Is it usual for the department just to decide not to implement a law that's passed? I mean, it would seem appropriate to me that if you didn't like the law that was passed, for you to come in and try to change the law. But to change a forecast based on a change in procedure in the department seems to me to be a pretty unusual way to deal with things.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Isn't that illegal? It seems to me that if a law has been passed, that not to implement it would be illegal.
Well, we don't have the DHS police, so, you know. I suppose a client, if they were smart enough and had some legal assistance, could file a lawsuit, but I don't think that's going to happen either. So here we are.
This isn't the only place, Madam Chair, that this has happened. It's also happened in a bill that I passed last year that they decided not to fully implement. It looks like they're only implementing it for 7 months rather than the full 12 months. And I just wonder if the department didn't see this recession coming and decide to.
Well, in this case, it doesn't make any sense because there's surplus in the Minnesota Care Fund. So the idea that we would limit the implementation of the law just doesn't make sense to me. But
Madam Chair, I think the department would say that the repeal of the verification leaves a fair amount of room for interpretation. And the concern that the department has, and in fact something which has come to light, is that
decided not to go back.
I'm inclined to assume that a lot of what happens under these verification requirements is that it's an administrative burden, and that the administrative burden is much of the impact when you see verification affecting caseload. My cynical tendency is to think that a lot of it is the administrative barrier.
That is what we've heard from people in our districts.
What we've learned, or what I think we can infer from the quality control review that found the eligibility errors, is that about half of the impact that we saw is in fact enforcement of the ESI policy. So, somewhat to my surprise, it looks to me like the caseload effect that we saw from the increased verification, that about half of it was in fact enforcement of the policy in a way that it had never been enforced before.
Yeah, I don't know if they've got any.
Well, Mr. Hoffman, part of the reason that this is also upsetting to me is because we need to remember that half the families in this program are eligible for MA, and there is no employer sponsored insurance barrier in the MA program.
That's true, Madam Chair.
So, you know, we get obsessed with trying to make sure that we're following the rules, except we forget that half the people in the program shouldn't even have these rules.
Madam Chair, the policy does not apply to children at an income level that they would be eligible for medical assistance. It does apply to the parents, to the parents who might be eligible for medical assistance.
That's it, exactly.
A lot of it. SCHIP funding. We got additional SCHIP funding for federal fiscal year 08. We got
Senator Olson has a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate, I'm sorry to interrupt, but going back to the issue that you raised and that Senator Pretner Solon raised, I'd just like to say how concerning it is to me that as a legislature we would have to argue with a department if we've passed a law about whether they have the discretion to decide whether to implement the law or not. I was at a hearing this summer that had to do with how the flood money was being passed to south eastern Minnesota, and Commissioner McElroy had that conversation at that hearing. And it seems to me that if there's any question about whether a law we've passed has ambiguity, then that question goes to what the legislative intent that has been expressed, not to the discretion of a particular department when that legislative intent is very clear. And so I just think that that's an important principle, that we don't let there not that be any misunderstanding about the legislature's right to pass laws and expect to have them implemented, and not to look for some kind, allow departments to be able to look for some type of loophole to not implement a law when the legislative intent is very clear, because that is illegal. To the extent that there is ever any question, certainly they can come back and ask the legislators. We're all available. And the record.
They did. And we did not agree that they should not implement this law. But they chose to do it anyway.
Well, I guess, as you said, someone can bring a lawsuit if they choose, and maybe we have to make do whatever we can to make sure the record is clear in terms of what the legislative intent is, and at least do. It sounds like you have, and we will continue to do our part. And I don't know how we deal with an impasse like this, but to me that's just really concerning, because why have a state that's supposed to be governed by laws if we have departments that feel that they can choose not to follow them?
Yeah, well, Mr. Hoffman's just a messenger here, so maybe we'll have to have a hearing on this issue, get the correct people in here to talk to us about it. Continue.
A last bit of good news, Madam Chair. SCHIP, some additional SCHIP funding. We got $35 million of additional SCHIP funding. Our main use of SCHIP funding is to pay for the coverage of Minnesota CARE parents between 100% of the poverty level and 200% of the poverty level. The use of this $35 million for the Minnesota CARE parents gains the state about $8 million. And the reason it's only eight is that it's the enhanced match part of it. We could use Medicaid money at 50% federal match. The additional SCHIP money allows us to use federal money at a 65% match. And so the Health Care Access Fund gets a gain of $8 million out of the $35 million. And that's the end of the overview, Madam Chair, if there are questions.
And I gather the general fund got the benefit of the rest of it.
Oh, no, Madam Chair. It doesn't have any benefit to the general fund. It's just that we use say we were going to spend $1 million, if we were short of SCHIP funds, we'd spend $500,000 of healthcare access money, and we'd spend $500,000 of Medicaid money. We get an extra $650,000, call it, of SCHIP money.
Yeah, I understand how the match works. What I don't understand is you said that we were eligible for $35 million more. Is the rest of it money we just can't claim then?
We do claim it.
We get $8 million of it?
We do claim it, and we spend it on the Minnesota Care parents, but we spend $35 million of federal SCHIP money where we could have spent $27 million of Medicaid money.
I see.
And so most of it just goes to take the place of the Medicaid money, and we get the value of that. Of that 15 points of enhanced match.
Okay. So it's really kind of misstating it that we have a $35 million.
Well, they gave us 35, but the way we use it only gains us 8.
Okay.
And we do... Madam Chair, SCHIP money is capped. And so we always budget the SCHIP money in such a way that we have all the SCHIP money we need. The other large group that we pay for with the SCHIP money is the non-citizen medical assistance pregnant women. We always set aside enough SCHIP money to cover them, because on them, if we didn't have the SCHIP money, we would pay 100% state funds. And then what's left of SCHIP money, we spend on the Minnesota Care parents as much as we have available.
Good morning, little girl.
Other questions or anything else you would like me to?
Any other questions? If not, I guess you have done a very good job, and you have caused us to think about many things that are important for us to continue to think about. So we thank you for your presentation today.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And with that, the meeting is adjourned.
Look forward to sitting here.